Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Anand Rathi Wealth Limited earnings conference call for quarter one of financial year 2025-26. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Feroze Azeez, Joint Chief Executive Officer from Anand Rathi Wealth Limited. Thank you, and over to you, Mr. Feroze.
Thank you so much, Rico. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining the quarter ended 30th June 2025. We today have with us the Group CFO, Mr. Jugal Mantri, the Product and Research Head, Mr. Chethan Shenoy, CFO, Mr. Rajesh Bhutara, and Head Investor Relations, Mr. Vishal Sanghavi. Let me give you a quick highlight of the company's performance. During Q1 FY26, our profits grew by 28% year-on-year, and they've reached about 93.9 crores. The total AUM grew by about 27%, which takes us to 87,797 crores as of 30th of June, and the equity mutual fund share has moved up to 54% as of June 2025, and we are about 14% away from the 1 lakh crore number. This will help us get to the subtle ambition which we have shared in our previous calls of getting to 50/50, 50 trail income. We are inching closer to that with this quarter as well. And the next important highlight is that we have had a record net mobilization of 3,825 crores. Like we have also given a subtle expectation or not a commitment or indication that we will try and have our net mobilization agnostic to the market sentiment in a quarter where mutual fund net flows in equity moved down from 45,000 to about 23,000 crores in June. We have, with God's grace, achieved the highest ever net mobilization of 3,825, as I just said. In our flagship private wealth business for Q1 FY26, we added around 600 new client families on a net basis, bringing our total number of client families which we serve as 12,330. The client attrition rate, which is an abysmal number, continues to be that way, and for quarter one FY26 is 0.11%, underscoring the strength of our client-centric, uncomplicated approach, focusing on risk-adjusted return, not only either side of the table. The regret RM attrition was 2 for this quarter, and in spite of that, we've had a client attrition number of 0.11. And when we are looking at RM attrition, we are also looking at some places where there's cultural misfits, and these are mathematically regret attritions, but there are more considerations when we let go of a few of our colleagues. Digital wealth business, which is a B2B2C business, registered an AUM growth of 19% year-on-year and reached 2,055 crores. The number of clients increased 23% to 6,484. The O5 business, which is a SaaS platform, has 6,627 subscribers with platform assets of about 1.58 lakh crores at the end of Q1 FY26. Now I hand over the call to Mr. Jugal G. Mantri, who will take us with some more updates. Jugal sir, over to you, sir.
Yeah, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you, Feroze bhai. Friends, let me give you the financial highlight on consolidated numbers for the quarter went by. During June quarter of financial year 25-26, our consolidated total revenue grew by 16% YOY to rupees 284.3 crores, and profit after tax increased by 28% YOY to rupees 93.9 crore. We have achieved 25% of our PAT guidance of rupees 375 crores and 24% of our revenue guidance of rupees 1,175 crores in Q1 FY26. Mutual fund distribution revenue registered strong growth of 27% YOY to rupees 113.1 crores in Q1 FY26. Profit after tax margin was 33% for Q1 FY26 as compared to 29.9% for Q1 FY25. Return on equity for Q1 FY26 was 44.4% on annualized basis. So these were the synopsis of the financial. Now I would request Mr. Jayco to invite our friends for Q&A session.
Thank you, sir. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and 1 on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and 2. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Thank you. Our first question comes from the line of Niranjan Kumar from Equirus. Please go ahead.
Sir, first of all, congratulations on good set of results. So can you please provide data on inflows during the quarter in mutual funds and structured products as well?
Sure. Jugal sir, can you throw some light on these breakups of the numbers? You're asking for the top line numbers, right? Sir?
I'm asking about the inflows, sir. Net inflows.
Net inflows, okay. So the net inflows cumulatively between these two were about 3,300 crores. If you can give some precise numbers, it will be helpful.
So the net inflow was 3,825 crore rupees. On equity mutual fund, it was 1,983 crore. Debt mutual fund, it was 300 crore. And on structure product, it was 1,063 crores. And rest was in other item, that was 480 crores.
Okay, sir. Thank you. That's from my side.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Ashaka Shah from Samiksha Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Yes, ma'am. May I request you to use your answer, ma'am?
I had the same question, I'm sorry, it's the same question as the previous one.
Thank you, ma'am. We'll move to the next question here. The next question comes from the line of Muskan Agarwal from Swan Investments. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Bhavesh here. The question I had in mind was related to OPEX growth. You know, historically, OPEX growth has been largely in sync with revenue growth. But this time round, the divergence is quite significant. So besides the, human resources related question you mentioned, is there any change in incentive structure or other cost cutting we might have resorted to, which is leading to this divergence between revenue growth and OPEX growth?
Super. Let me ask you. Yeah, go ahead.
See, as far as concerned, in case of OPEX, it is more or less in line with what we have been achieving and what we have been incurring over the period of time. The only thing is now we have really started getting the advantage of number of RM who have been maturing. So if you will see that over a period of time, like we have added number of RMs, and what happens that when a RM start his journey, we have our, first of all the incentive formula since 2007, there has been no change. The only advantage is the new RM when he comes, till the time he reached to the threshold of up to say about 4x of his RSR, he doesn't start earning incentive. So the number of new RMs which have been added into the system in last 1.5 year, 2 years, they have started reaching to the threshold and started crossing 2 and 3 RSR level. So the advantage is they have started contributing on the revenue side and their fixed cost of salary is coming into the operating cost, but they have not yet reached to the incentive level. That is about the new RMs, and that is why you see the employee cost in percentage terms, it looks marginally lower, but it is in line with what we have been achieving historically.
Okay. And
related
question was on number of RMs added. So practically for last 3 quarters, the number is flat. what is the thought process here, and if we plan to again resume expanding our RM base?
Firstly, I think it's last three quarters have been flat. We've added about 20 odd RMs in the last one year, point one. Point two, how we look at RM addition is, unlike most other wealth management outfits who believe in lateral hiring, funding their 80% of their RM growth, we have 80% internal movements. What happens is we have a threshold which says that these are the number of RMs who can be in the non-mature stage. Below 40 crores, we try and keep a watch of what is the number. When that number drops is when we promote more people. Unlike another wealth management outfit, when I don't add my RMs, it doesn't mean that I've not added some more training for the same RMs who would go to be promoted in a subsequent quarter. The question, have the next 100 RMs already been trained? At what point in time do we promote them? Depends on their skill set and also depends on what's my capacity of RM. Will you see this number change? The answer is yes. What will be the variables which will change it is not how much money can we spend to hire from outside. How many RMs do we have below 40 crores? That number, if I'm not wrong, dropped from 93 to 54 in the quarter, which creates huge capacity for promotions and subsequent RMs who would go in the marketplace. Does it answer, sir?
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Rohan Mandora with Equirus Securities. Please go ahead, sir.
Yeah. Hi, good afternoon, sir. Congrats on good set of numbers. Sir, just continuing the previous participant's question on the OpEx. Sir, the explanation that was given that in the last two years, whatever RMs have been added, they're yet to reach that. They're just touching the break-even level, and so the operating efficiency is looking better. If I look at employee expense as a proportion of total revenues, that was around 45% for most part of last year. Suddenly in this quarter, that's come down significantly. Is there a differential in the incentive that is paid out on the mutual fund versus MLDs? Because revenue growth in mutual fund has been almost 27% year-on-year and 10% sequentially, and on MLDs it's 36% Q-on-Q growth. Is there a factor of that leading to a lower growth in employee expenses this quarter vis-a-vis the revenue growth?
No, Rohan, that's not so complex. We don't pay incentive. We pay bonuses only once a year.
Right.
Okay. Last time it was 17.1 for the first quarter. 17.1 for the full year. This time it is 16.9. Quarter-to-quarter comparisons may not be right because it depends on who brought the revenue. For example, if this revenue is distributed amongst 382 RMs evenly, my cost is lower. If the RM who's already reached a slab of 32.5%, which is my maximum slab, if he or she does the maximum revenue, my shares could be larger than a linear distribution. It is not just about the revenue, it's also about kis RM ne kiya aur wo kis slab mein tha. If there's an RM who crosses a certain slab, and that's the person who got 80% hypothetically of the quarter's revenue, then payouts will look larger.
Got it.
It's not a quarterly number. If you look at it yearly, you will see hardly any difference. Other point which you asked, is there a payout differential between upfronts and pays? The answer is no. Every rupee of revenue is treated equal for the last 3 years.
Sure. Does that mean that the share of incremental business, incremental revenue from RMs having lower AUM was higher this quarter? That's where the benefit is coming from.
Yeah. What happens is we provision as per the slabs of their targets also. It is also a function of, one, what they have done so far, what is the target they've given, and then you have a provision on a certain slab. The answer is yes. Last time around, if there are big ticket revenues from larger top 50 RMs would cost me more.
Sure. Got it. Sir,
Just to add to what Feroze bhai has said, Rohan, what happens that if you just do the breakup of what the employee expenses which we have incurred. In the Q1 FY 2025, my fixed cost on account of personnel was 60 crore rupees. Okay?
Okay.
This year that has gone up to 70 crore rupees. but the incentive provision, which was 48 crore in Q1 FY25, that has come down to 44 crore. Okay.
Sure.
So there is a increasing trend in on the fixed expenses side, but as he has rightly explained that who is bringing the revenue and what percentage of amount he is earning as incentive, that depends on person to person and on his vintage as well as on existing book. So that is why there is a differential on incentive provision.
Sure. So second was on the regret RMs, the two RMs who have left this quarter, and one I think was a regret RM last quarter. So what were the reasons for them leaving? Because typically we have had a very good incentive structure and we have had a very low regret RM. So any specific reasons that you could point out for people leaving?
Yes, of course. One or two of them were cultural mistakes. So we had to weed one or two of them, and one or two were voluntary exits. And the reason could be whatever, different for different people. Largely, I don't want to touch too much on a public forum, but yeah, it could be a cultural mix-in which triggered that, and it's from one location, all three.
Got it. So thirdly,
but it hardly matters, Rohan, out of 380 plus RM, if one or two RM is leaving, that is inevitable.
Right, that I agree, sir. But just that Anand Rathi was having one of the good incentive structure. So
what that is still remains. Right? If 99.9% people are still continuing, that shows that.
Right.
And we also realize some degree of inefficiencies will have to be weeded out.
Sure.
So that's a strategy which we try and learn. See, we're not always fixing it. We were... one of you, and it's only had asked me, saying that, yeah, how come zero attrition? Are you saying everybody is as efficient commercially? So why is there no involuntary attrition where you're asking people to leave? So that was, so we've been testing several hypotheses. Now, point is that you have some attrition, some instigated internally, or some not. But we are also trying to see if there are some inefficiencies. Will we look at it a little differently? The answer is yes, going forward. I'm just telling you how we discuss internally between Rakesh and I.
Got it, sir. Sir, third was on the debt MF AUM. It has increased by 9% Q-on-Q. And it was declining for the past few quarters. So is there any portfolio allocation strategy change which is leading to that?
I'll tell you precisely the reason. The couple of clients who had, the large clients who were doing STPs.
Okay.
These are not permanent liquid money. So you're saying, if your question heard right, was that debt allocation has become larger. Is that what the question was?
Yes.
Yeah, some large clients have started, those who have come in money after March are choosing to do it as a staggered equity. So it is high, it's momentary debt.
Got it. And then lastly, okay,
Don't hold me to the second decimal, largely I'm saying. 80% of that is staggered entry into equity.
Got
because
it.
Of some degree of uncertainty in the market. Person says stagger kar do, 12-15 kisto mein, hafte ki, to kar dete hain.
Got it. And then lastly, on the issuances of MLDs, last couple of years, if you look at the trend, 1Q has been pretty high, and then it has been sort of flattish to marginal decline. But if you look at on a year-on-year basis, so Q-on-Q it looks very good, but on a year-on-year basis, the revenues on MLDs has grown by 8%. So, is there some constraints because of which the growth is falling here, or like how should one look at the growth on the MLD for the full year and going ahead for next 1-2 years?
Like I repeated in the past, every revenue item which you read out to me back again is a resultant outcome of our client allocations. We think clients start hoga, client objectives start hoga, uske allocation start hoga. What are the problems, what are the highest chance of achieving his objectives? Now, let's assume if the market remains flat for 1 year, the structured product still, because of its modest need of NISQ growth, will deliver a little positive return. So sometimes what happens is if equity markets don't do too well, like they did, only 4%, 5% Nifty over the last 1 year, in the last financial year, monies which mature from structured products would buy equity mutual funds. Okay. If equities do very well, let's assume I have a client. I also manage clients. Right? So one client here, Busca, if there's a structure product maturity, if equity mutual funds have not delivered 14 for the last year, and structures have delivered 15% for the last year, when the maturity happens, I'm not going to reinvest full thing into structure product. I will again divide the portfolio into 65-35, which was the agreed allocation. So if markets do badly, you will have some money moving to mutual funds. So buy low, sell high. It's just in books otherwise. Kitabo mein kehte ki buy low, sell high. Otherwise, most HNIs do just the opposite. Like you will see when the market is down, people are not putting in lump sum money. So to remove that recency bias is why Firoz is governed by a formula, agreed on 65-35, then he has to do just that. And if that's what he follows religiously, it will mean that he will buy more equity when the markets are down. When the markets are up, he will be buying more structured products.
Got it. And then lastly, one data-giving question. What is the breakup of structured products issuances between primary and secondary in 1Q?
Yes, Jugal sir will be able to answer this. Jugal sir?
1700 for primary and 700 for secondary. 755
sure,
to be precise. Okay.
Sure, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. A reminder to all the participants, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and 1 on your touchtone telephone. Our next question comes from the line of Jay Prakash from Coleman Capital. Please go ahead. Sorry to interrupt you, sir. May I request you to use your handset, sir? Your audio is breaking, sir.
Hello.
Yes, sir. We are unable to hear you, sir. Your audio is breaking, sir.
So my question was on the revenue growth, which is 16%, whereas AUM growth is 47%. So just to understand the disconnect here.
I didn't get the question at all. Sorry. Nico?
Could you maybe request you to use your handset, please, Mr. Jay Prakash? Because no, sir, we are unable to hear you clearly, sir.
Okay. Okay, I'll get it back.
Yes, sir, please. Thank you. A reminder to all participants, you may press star and 1 to ask a question. Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Sunil Shah from SRE PMS. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks Firoz and the entire team for wonderful achievement. Thanks for this opportunity. First of all, let me thank Vishal and Kalpesh for the sessions that they had for all of us to make us understand the structured product. So thanks so much, Firoz, for organizing and Vishal for conducting along with Kalpesh the entire sessions. Thank you so much. So my question is about this entire thing happening in the markets about the Jane Street episode and SEBI really trying to clamp down on the F&O volumes. So given that, you know, the structured products for us, which we act on, does this in any way impact us for the volumes that could get shrink going forward? That's my first question.
Yes. Okay, you want me to go first down to this. Perfect. So, Sunil, thank you for the feedback last time around. Very grateful for that feedback. Because we always wanted to explain structure product as threadbare. Of course, Kalpesh has done only 3 sessions. If the group of analysts want another 100 sessions, we are more than happy. Because if that produces more issuers, it's a great marketplace. And so, thank you for that suggestion. I think that was the best suggestion we got last quarter. In the result. Now coming to, of course, the Jane Street and the regulation in terms of option volumes. I think for the next 1.5-2 lakh crores of our next AUM, we don't see any challenge with the current market. Of course, on one index, what Jane Street hypothetically, at least in the note, did was made cash market losses to make build put option positions or call option positions on expiry day and trigger stop losses for the rest of them. So any large position on specific index could be something which somebody can do exactly what Jane Street did. So will we look at more diversification In terms of Nifty Sensex, the answer is yes. Will it impact our next 1.5 lakh, 2 lakh crores of AUM? The answer is no, Sunil. I don't want to give away all the plans. There are about 4-step plans, plan A, plan B, plan C, and plan D. I will probably, we can do another session where I elaborate.
Okay. Sunil,
sir, can I add one more thing? But the one thing which I'm amazed as a professional is the kind of intellect SEBI has used to move our options market from notional contract values to delta values. It is one of the most right thing to do, because the 1 rupee option had the same notional value and at the money option almost had the same notional value, which was creating those 500 crores of short limits I've spoken about in the previous earnings calls, getting breached with just 2 lakh options, put options, 2 lakh premium. So now they've moved from notional values to delta values, point one. Point two, I think also creating a several pieces of, impediments for any manipulator have been done beautifully. And I think that's one change. There are very few markets who operate limits with delta as an institution.
Okay. Fine. So that helps us to understand, at least on the fear part, that we need not worry, at least for another 1.5 lakh crores of AUM that we reach. So one more point which I had, more of a question type of thing, would be currently, if I understand, the net inflow for us has been close to 3,825 crores. And our RM base is 382 crores. That exactly comes to about 10 crore of incremental AUM per RM per quarter kind of a number. So for going forward, can we get that per capita? You know, because as a country, we might be the fourth in terms of GDP. What really matters is the per capita. Similarly, for us, the incremental contribution per RM per quarter would be perhaps one of the numbers to really keep a watch on, given that, you know, market could go 10% plus minus and the AUM could change accordingly. But the real strength is in terms of the per capita contribution per RM per quarter. So some such metrics, if it can be shared. And one more point can be, if we can further get into the details of equity and structured product breakup as well. So, because that's going to be the base where we'll get higher percentage of, you know, income. So if we can get one such number, if it's possible for you to share going forward, I think that will be more useful for all of us, if at all it's possible.
Okay, sure. It's a very, very valid suggestion. One thing which is a little different than the wealth management outfits is, because they do lateral hires largely and internal promotion is a smaller proportion, what ends up happening is there are very similar kinds of private bankers. We have a private banker who's been 26 and he's become private banker after 4 years of training. And I have somebody who has got almost 25 years of experience, out of which 18 are in Anandrati. So I'm just telling you, there's a lot of differential between my youngest cousin and the most mature one. I can divide it, but I think dividing them would also be a little more sensible. I think we'll work on this and give you these numbers for sure.
Sure.
We'll divide it into matured RMs, 5 year plus RMs, and stuff like that.
Because it's again.
So Vishal, if you could write this down. Yeah. It's a good suggestion.
Yeah, and again.
5 year plus, 3 year plus.
Sorry for my
interruption.
Please continue.
Because we stratify our RMs into three categories, sir. Less than 3, 3 to 5, and 5 plus. So Sunil is looking for what is the per capita, what per RM net mobilization in these three strata. We can probably give them. It will take a lot of strategy for us and information for you.
And sir, it's competitive, so, you know, sensitive. So I just leave it for you to take that call. That's just my suggestion. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I think this information, we are reasonably transparent, and I think we should be okay. We will just look at it internally and publish it to you in the next call or before that.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for all this. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Sayam Sondi with Desvelado Advisory. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, sir. I'm congratulating for a positive start for FY26. Sir, my question is, what is the latest update on the GIFT City subsidiary and international expansion of UK and Bahrain office?
Sorry? Can you go again?
Sir, the question is, what is the latest update on the GIFT City subsidiary and international expansion of UK and Bahrain office?
Oh, UK and Bahrain office. Yes, so one is an update, but I'll tell you what we look at international business. When you look at Dubai currently, which we have for almost 10 years, we just finished 10 years in Dubai. And we think the interest of NRIs in India will grow dramatically. And I think the kind of flexibility GIFT City also has to offer, the tax efficiency it has to offer, I think one of them in the couple of calls back had international office.
So sorry to interrupt you, Mr. Sayam. So your audio is breaking. May we request you to use your handset in case you're using any Bluetooth device?
Sir, actually I'm not able to hear word of Saro, sir. Hello.
Hello. Yes, sir. Can you hear me now, sir?
Yes, yes. Is it clear now?
Yes, sir. Please go ahead with your question.
Should I repeat my question or the question is clear?
Update on the Bahrain and the UK office, right?
Yes, yes.
So they are in the very nascent stage of getting licenses currently. Point two, I think as soon as you start a business, it's not going to be a huge contributor. But what is our vision for international NRIs or NRIs investing in India? We have a large opportunity. Given the interest levels of NRIs, which will in India, we want to make sure that we have our offices in place and the strategy in place. Point three, SEBI has been creating several platforms which make it very easy for a pooled investment. Okay, especially for an international in the GIFT City. And the AIFs and other businesses which can channelize money into India are developing beautifully. So we have just got licenses, or we are in the process of getting licenses. But I think the long-term vision is we believe that there will be a lot of money from NRIs flowing into India for the next decade. And we want to capitalize on that and not just with one office. But once we finish 10 years in a specific business, then that is when we try to build our business brick by brick. We just finished 10 years in Dubai. After having seen an office and its profitability and the pros and cons fighting the international products, now we were confident to have other locations. That's why you see Bahrain and UK. We are the wealth manager which tries to build it brick by brick. And so we are reasonably bullish on international money coming to India and getting a pie of it. Does it answer, sir?
Okay. No, thank you, sir.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Muskan Agarwal from Swan Investments. Please go ahead.
Hi. So, the guidance that you guys have released regarding the revenue pattern AUM, so when we see like you guys are pretty much there when it comes to AUM, but there is a lag in the revenue and PAT numbers. So there are two questions. First, if you can help me understand the difference, and if you guys are like expecting to revise the AUM guidance.
Ha, Muskan. Muskan, we have met our revenue numbers for the year. Unlike 25%, like you rightly pointed out, we have met 24.17%. And the PAT number is almost 25%. That's point one. Point two, do I see any change in the guidance? The answer is a big no. Because we'll be able to achieve those numbers is how we have always under-committed, over-delivered. And you will also be very happy to note, Muskan, that out of the NSE Small Cap 250 companies which we are a part of, our primary analysis says that there is only one company which has given a PAT guidance and also met it for three successive years, which is Anand Rathi Wealth Limited. Quite a few don't give a PAT guidance. Very few give a PAT guidance. Out of those who gave a PAT guidance for 3 years and met it, it's only one company. And with that, I'm just giving you a little ashwasan and some hope that we will meet our guidance this time as well. With the grace of God, of course.
So means any explanation regarding why, like, there's a gap, like considerable gap between the AUM and the PAT and revenue figures, because it's just 24% and 25%. But AUM targets, like, you have achieved 88%.
Yes, madam. See, AUM is like a photograph. And revenue is like a movie. AUM depends on where markets ended on 30th June. Revenue is an outcome of every day's action and every day's revenue. 30th June, if the market fell 3%, hypothetically, would my AUM be 88,000? Approximately, the answer is no. It would have been 86,000. So when you look at AUM as an average, then there will be sanctity with the revenue. So what has happened is you've added 3,800 crores. And in the first quarter, Nifty has given about 7-8% return. And our model portfolio of mutual funds have outbeaten that by 2.47 as of day before yesterday. So AUM, that's why we are not revising the 1 lakh number, because 31st March ko kya Nifty hogi, mujhe to pata nahi.
We don't know. Yeah.
So what happens is there is something which is an internal controlled variable, which is how much I can bring from client's wallet to my asset. That is what we focus on. Then we pray to the Lord. Because then market movement and in turn clients return. And it's not one day. It's 30th June is the AUM number. Right? So if I gave you the average numbers, then you would understand. How
it is. Does it answer, madam?
Yeah, Firoz bhai, I would like to add, Muskan, if you look at it, like last year we were at a number of 79,000 crore. Okay? I'm just rounding off for the purpose of understanding. And we have given a guidance to have the AUM of 1 lakh crore rupees by end of the financial year 25-26. Correct? So what I need to add is 21,000 crore rupees in 12 months time. Now in 3 months time, from 79,000 crore rupees, we have reached at about 88,000 crore rupees.
Yes.
So how much we have crossed? We have achieved almost 8,800 crore rupees, which is 40% of the AUM addition target in 3 months only. So in fact, this is the only area we have by and large, with a very wide margin, we have beaten the target number which we have given. So I don't know why this question has come that we should revisit this number.
No.
I meant like upward revision.
Huh. Okay. No, we are happy to be committed at the level which has been given.
Okay, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. A reminder to all participants, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and 1 on a touchtone telephone. Our next question comes from the line of Kamlesh Gupta, who is an investor. Please go ahead.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity, sir. And congratulations to the team. The numbers are excellent. I have two questions. Various times, management has reiterated that the guidance of revenue will be 25-30% back. But last two quarters, it has come down to near about 25%. And the second question is, please throw on light on the same. And the second question is, from the last buyback, stock has given negative or negligible return. Could you considering anything, any corporate action for the recognition?
Yes. So one is, when we say, we have always given you 20-25% PAT guidance, long term, 10 years, 15 years. Our professional guru, Mr. Rakesh Rawal, who is also the CEO of the company, has always said 20-25% PAT growth for years to come. That might also imply 20-25% revenue. That's not on a quarter basis, that's on a year-on-year basis. That's our aspiration. Because we are in the business of managing one's money, if there are some maturities. We will not do anything sooner or later, and it's client monies which we manage. So when we give you a revenue guidance of 1175, that's the number you have to look at. From 980 to 1175.
That is about 20%
growth.
Yeah,
it is. Yeah. But we see that Arjun ki hum dekhte hain, sir. Of course, one or two quarters we don't look at it.
Okay. And the second one, sir?
Yes, the second one, sir. Stock has delivered whatever it has to deliver. I don't think, in my opinion, corporate action, of course, I don't remember what was the price during buyback, because I think stock prices are...
4450,
no, sir. Well, yeah, irrespective. For buyback, you can just check. But no, that was not the 4450. Was that the price at which we did the buyback?
Yes, before bonus, sir.
Yes, sir.
It was before 15.
So, sir, our corporate actions are buyback. I think we've not considered any buyback so far. And if there is any consideration, we will come back to you. And price is not a huge motivation for a buyback. Of course, earlier there used to be immense amount of tax efficiency when you used to do buybacks. I think the tax laws have changed on that as well, because the shareholder doesn't get it tax-free now anymore.
I think, sir, for the open market buyback, it is still there, sir.
Okay, sir. Thank you. Yeah, we'll check, because it's pardon my ignorance. Open market buyback if it's there. But we will come back to you. Because as of now, to my mind, there's nothing on the cards which we have discussed internally, if I have to tell you as transparently as it could yet.
But for shareholders, it does not make any difference, Firozbhai, whether he tender shares in buyback or whether he sell in the open market. So there is no tax advantage to the shareholder. Is there any tax advantage, Kamlesh, to shareholder?
Yes, sir.
If you share in buyback.
For shareholder, it is not there. For it is not there.
That is what I am asking.
But for company, it is beneficial. Still, its earlier rules apply, sir, I think, for the open market.
हमारा क्या है ना सर, कमलेश सर, हमें वैसे इन्वेस्टर चाहिए 10-10 साल बिजनेस को देखें. सो हम दस एंड इन द मीन टाइम वी आर ट्राइंग टू डू आर बेस्ट फॉर अ शेयर होल्डर इन टर्म्स ऑफ डिविडेंड. इन स्पाइट ऑफ द बोनस शेयर्स डबलिंग द नंबर ऑफ शेयर्स, वी ट्राई टू कीप द बोनस रूपी शेयर रूपी वैल्यू ऑफ द बोनस इक्वल, सो दैट द फाइनल डिविडेंड डबल्स. So we're doing that, and we're always trying to look at people who don't see us on a quarter, 6 months, 1 year, and that's how we like to have our shareholders. जो हमें समझें कि भाई 10 साल में 20-25% की compounding का business अगर चाहे हो सके, that's how we look at it. Of course, आपकी point valid है. I will also examine, because I'm not a CA, but I've tried to read all the relevant ones. But this is enlightening for me. I'll definitely do some homework. I'll show you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. A reminder to all participants, you may press star and 1 to ask a question. As there are no further questions, I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Firoz for closing comments.
Thank you, Zyko, and thank you everyone to join this call. It's a privilege to have our prospective and existing shareholders on this call. And it's, if I have to go out of the script, I'm so happy and enlightened each time you guys ask questions, because it pushes us to think a little more and pushes us in a brighter direction. So we as professionals always assure you our best ability given to you as shareholders. So I think thank you for those wonderful questions, which sets us thinking, sometimes improves us, enlightens us. Grateful. Have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you. On behalf of Anand Rathi Wealth Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.